Denver Catechism, Lord's Day 42, which is found on page 29. Well, okay, I got to stop saying that because there's two different books, two different paginations. So Lord's Day 42, this is regarding the Eighth Commandment. So please respond to the questions. What does God forbid in the Eighth Commandment?
God forbids not only such theft and robbery as are punished by the government, but God views as theft also all wicked tricks and devices whereby we seek to get our neighbor's goods, whether by force or by deceit, such as unjust weights, lengths, measures, goods, coins, usury, or by any means forbidden of God. Also, all covetousness and the misuse and waste of his gifts. But what does God require of you in this commandment? That I further my neighbor's good where I can, and may deal with him as I would have others deal with me, and labor faithfully, so that I may be able to help the poor in their need. When we think of the Eighth Commandment, we're quick to reduce it to mean don't take what's not yours. So we think of shoplifting or robbing a bank or something like that. Well, if we haven't done any of those things, then we probably are in the clear, right? Catechism actually goes goes a lot further than that. It goes on to say all wicked tricks and devices whereby we get our neighbor's goods. So maybe perhaps a more helpful or more in-depth, a more helpful definition of this commandment could mean taking advantage of someone else's possessions for selfish gain. So yes, this can apply to taking someone's wallet, but it also can apply to work ethic or lack thereof. It's our nature to convince ourselves of being victims of our circumstances and feel entitled to certain benefits. And in the past few years, I've gone through many jobs personally, and the number one thing everybody complains about is that they're not being paid enough. Everybody complains about that the company they work for are just a bunch of slave drivers. Everybody wants to get paid $50 an hour, but they don't want to work for it. So instead, they cut corners and do the least amount possible, but still get paid the same. If you ever read the book of Proverbs, you know that God hates slothfulness. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It is no commander. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provision in summer and gathers its food and harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief. In the context of your workplace, this mentality of self-victimization, this mentality of entitlement and selfishness, is theft, because you are stealing your employer's time and money. Many people take advantage of the welfare system as a means of living instead of a stepping stone to get out of poverty. Well, whose money is that? The taxpayers, right? It's our taxpaying dollars being at work. Many think that health care is a human right and should pay, but who's going to pay for that universal health care? Taxpayers are, along with any services that the government wants to include, such as gender confirmation surgery and abortions, to name a couple of controversial ones. There's also a recent push for reparations, especially in California. You may have heard of Gavin Newsom looking into it. He's not as far as actually making it into law. But he's looking into it. And a lot of Christians are actually backing up this idea of reparations. Simply put, reparations is paying back those who have suffered wrong. In this context, it's about slavery.
And of course, everything about American slavery is evil to the core. There's no question about that. But at the same time, what took place in the South in the 1800s, those people were no longer living, and they were no longer slaves, at least in that same context, as in the South in the 1800s. And there is nothing Christian about reparations. The Bible talks a lot about restitution, which is when you have wronged someone, you pay back what you have taken or pay back what you have done. If you stole or killed someone's cattle, then you have to pay them back. And guys like Eric Mason will use these passages, a popular preacher, will use these passages to justify the idea of reparations. But this is an embarrassingly weak justification, because every one of those situations in the Bible is where the victim and the perpetrator are still alive. You won't find anything about generational restitution or reparations, where even after the people affected are long gone, and then the children's children still receive money or benefits. This is also a form of theft that is fueled by an endless, vicious cycle of envy and covetousness. We are the victims. The white people are the cause of this generational trauma, and they need to pay for it and give us stuff. Meanwhile, the ones who pay in taxes take no part in the slavery that took place. And the ones who receive this stuff aren't even slaves. And whatever price, if this goes through, you know, whatever price that they place is 100% arbitrary. And the fatal flaw, the biggest flaw of reparations, is it's never going to be enough. It's always going to be something more. It's never going to be enough. Paul says in Ephesians 4:28, as we read earlier in the law responsive reading, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. You see, the transforming work of the gospel is that it changes our mindset about our work. Work is something that God created before the fall. And so it is a good thing that God has given us to work. He's provided us a mind, a body, and skills, and opportunities to use those in exchange for income, which is really an amazing concept. When you buy groceries, every single dollar that you spend was earned by your labor. Your work made it possible to buy that loaf of bread. And as stewards of your resources, you have the ability, and even, you have the ability and an obligation even, to give those in need and give generously. This also glorifies the Lord, because it acknowledges that your money really isn't yours. It's His. A covetous heart only lives to get. As Christians, we live to give and give generously for God's glory. Much, much more can be said, but let's end our summary of Lord's Day 42 with that.